Bloom Shapiro, accounting, tax, and business advisors, maintaining an unwavering focus on your future so you can focus on what's most important to you, your business, in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Reston, Virginia, and Greater Boston. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. Larry Rifkin along with John Krofcik. And John, have you ever stayed at what is called an Airbnb?
I stayed at a HomeAway, which is very similar to Airbnb. I think it may be a smaller company from them or something.
Well, Airbnb is a remarkable success when it comes to room sharing. And of course, for so many years, John, our choices were Sheraton, Hilton, Holiday Inn, Motel 6. Let me get down to where I normally stayed. La Quinta. No, you know
what I'm saying. They'll leave the light on for you.
Right, exactly. So now we have so many different choices because, let's be honest, those rooms are rather conventional. We know when we walk into one what we're going to find. A little desk, perhaps a bed, we hope, a bathroom that we can claim as our own for at least a couple of days. But it doesn't have unique properties or sensibilities about it. Now you can have a whole home experience thanks to Airbnb.
Yeah, well, no, that was good. When we went to Nashville, we stayed at somebody's home, and it was very, very nice. The only thing I thought that was kind of weird was
they wouldn't leave.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It turned out that there was a fenced-off part, and there was a trailer, and it turned out she was living in a trailer in the backyard while we were in the house.
Oh, yeah, because they want to use this to make more money. I know. So, well, we had an experience recently. We went up to check out the New Hampshire primary and what was going on up there, and we got an Airbnb. We didn't get to it until very, very late at night. And, well, it wasn't up to our standards, let's put it that way. But we got our money back. I mean, everything worked out. But every other experience that we have had has been a good one. Oh, by the way, for those of you who are sitting on the edge of your seat wondering, what happened to Larry that night and his family? Did they sleep on the streets? No, actually, we did find, and we love Hampton Inn, but we found a room at a Hampton Inn 2 days before the New Hampshire primary, which was pretty remarkable. We thought every room would have been taken up. But having said that, the Airbnb way, we have to understand this in the new economy, because Airbnb is not just one of these companies like so many others, like Uber and Lyft, for those who want to stay somewhere rather than drive around. It's really successful. On its face, it's actually turning a profit and leading the way as it relates to expanding the plethora of services that they have for those who are going to be traveling and want a different kind of experience.
Well, I think there's a lot of pushback, too. I read in some towns they're kind of outlawing it because people are partying. They're, you know, they're coming into the neighborhood, they're partying, and then they're leaving, and you know, the neighbors are going crazy.
But that's how unique this concept is, John. Think about it. Nobody ever thought that somebody was going to be renting out their home on a nightly basis. This is a new concept in America. It really is. But for many people, just as people take in foreign exchange students and they get value from that, there are people who say, I'm going to go live out in a trailer in my backyard and let these people enjoy my home, but I've got binoculars and I'm going to see what's going on. Well, anyway, Joseph Michelli is a remarkable writer and thinker about the new economy. He did a book also on Starbucks, which at some other point I'd love to talk to him about over a cup of coffee somewhere, maybe at Starbucks. But I really think you're going to really appreciate and enjoy this particular conversation about the Airbnb way today on America Trends.
with me on America Trends, and it's really a delight to have him, Joseph Michelli. And he's written an incredible book called The Airbnb Way, Five Leadership Lessons for Igniting Growth Through Loyalty, Community, and Belonging. And I want to just get into the phenomenon first, Joseph, of Airbnb. For a lot of people of a certain vintage, they're used to going to a Marriott or a Hilton, or maybe even a B&B in Charleston or in Savannah or whatever. But they may not have ventured into the Airbnb experience. Explain what that is, and I love the founding story that you told in the book.
Well, I completely connect with people who did not have a concept of Airbnb. In 2008, I was working with the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company, and we were exploring ways to make them relevant for a changing consumer. Literally, we were facing the challenge of whether or not the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company could serve beer in a bottle, because the trend had always been to put it in a glass in an elevated presentation to the guests. But guests were changing. And so that was the struggle of 2008 in my consulting life, right? Well, same year that I'm dealing with that, there are two guys in San Francisco who are trying to make rent on their place. And so they pitch it to some people who were coming into town for a convention. They were design students. They pitched it to this design convention, and they did it through a very rudimentary website. And lo and behold, people came to take their space. They were able to make rent that month. They leased out their spare room at $80 a night for air mattresses, and they gave the guests uncooked Pop-Tarts. So it was an air bed and breakfast of sorts, if you will. That worked for them, and they made it happen. 11 years later, the estimated valuation of Airbnb as they go to a public offering in 2020, the estimated value is somewhere around $38 billion. The value of the Marriott company, which is the parent company of the Ritz-Carlton, is around $45 billion. So here we have this company that's been around forever that I was talking about in 2008, valued at $45 billion. And now we have this other company that owns almost nothing except the web platform that's valued relatively similarly 11 years later. So what happened? That is the Airbnb phenomena. Airbnb is a marketplace for hosts and guests who want to find a wide range of possible accommodations and also experiences through the platform.
By the way, I love the way you start the book, Airbnb's Magical End-to-End Journey. And this is worth hearing. Amazon did not kill the retail industry. They did it to themselves with bad customer service. Netflix did not kill Blockbuster. They did it to themselves with ridiculous late fees. Uber did not kill the taxi business. They did it to themselves by limiting the number of taxis and fare control. Apple did not kill the music industry. They did it to themselves by forcing people to buy full-length albums. Airbnb did not kill the hotel industry. They did it to themselves with limited availability and pricing options. So in response to Airbnb, what has the rest of the hospitality industry been doing?
Well, it's what happens with a lot of things. At first, this is just a mild phenomenon. It's not going to be around. It's a fad. And so they ignored it. Then at some point, they started being affected by it, and they complained about it a lot and battled against it and tried to say, you know, we need to regulate it in draconian ways. And now they're very much a part of it all. And you'll see Marriott has its own home sharing division and creating, you know, varied stay options. And so now they've joined it, and they're trying to recoup some of what is a genie that will not go back in the bottle, and that is this phenomena of home sharing using a web-based platform.
And I know I have done it a number of times, and I'm amazed at how serious those who are providing their homes are in making certain that you have all the amenities you need, making certain that they are making it an experience where you really feel like you are at home. But how can Airbnb assure themselves that there are responsible owners who are lending their homes for this purpose and responsible people who are renting? It seems like quite a risk when you're not controlling all of the elements by any means.
Right, and you can't control. And I think control is an illusion in business in general, right? Like, I've worked for many companies that seem to have control of the whole thing, like You know, Starbucks controls every single operation in the United States other than those in the airports and supermarkets. So you think they control what the barista does on any given day. But then again, we've seen baristas denied people access to bathrooms, even though, you know, that wasn't called for. So you can't control. But I think you can influence, and literally if you have an employment brand where you do hire people like Starbucks, you can influence it by getting rid of the employees who don't work well for you. In a model like this, in a sharing economy, the best you can do is let the marketplace regulate it in large measure. So if you have a bad experience, let's say I promise you the sun, the moon, and the stars, and you don't get any of that, then you rate me after the fact and you say, this guy was a complete fraud. Well, you know, one of those or two of those, and before you know it, somebody searching for my property will not find me because the AI, the artificial intelligence, will block me in search or at least calculate me down so low that it would be very hard to ever find me. So the best you can do in many ways is that clearly if somebody violates the rules of the platform, they are banned from the platform for life. And it's amazing how that actually works because, you know, you think you could just come up with another email address and, you know, reestablish yourself under a different name in a different town, but it doesn't work. They really are able to use technologies to block me for life from being able to get back on.
And, you know, a lot of these founders, we think of them as being geniuses in their own right or having just one great idea in a lifetime, and sometimes they're not able to execute. But you're telling us that Airbnb has been very successful at actually executing their design and then expanding it, and unlike many other startups, to be profitable at this moment when many others seem successful because we hear a lot about them, but they aren't able to turn a profit.
Yeah, now Airbnb is in the black, and it's kind of a shocker for somebody that's what is called a unicorn growing at this incredible fast rate year over year. So yeah, without a doubt, they've done it, but they're scrappy too. I mean, and they aren't they will tell you they didn't know it all. They knew very little. They were just out of design school, but they were fastidious in their pursuit of knowledge. I mean, the people who come to your podcast, they're looking for information. That's the kind of people that really turned to the corner for Airbnb, and they were scrappy. You know, they got into some real financial difficulties early on because who's going to lend money to a bunch of guys who are trying to encourage people to rent out a room in their place to absolute strangers, right? So they weren't getting money that way. And at one point, they were so desperate for money that they just bought boxes of cereal, large quantity bulk boxes of cereals, repackaged them in the McCain Mavericks and the Obama O's, and they just repackaged them with this cool packaging, and they sold them for exorbitant amounts of money, made $30,000 on it, and kept themselves afloat for another, you know, 6 or 7 weeks until they got a lot more interest from people. And so it's fascinating to see how these overnight successes aren't really overnight successes, and they're not always people different than you and I. They may be just a little more persistent than a lot of other folks.
And we want to get into their business model a little bit more deeply. But when we think about it at the beginning, would it have been a reluctance on the part of somebody to lend their home out to a stranger, or for a stranger to say, I'm not going to go with the guarantee that I have that I know where to go to complain if at the Marriott, Ritz-Carlton, Sheraton, something goes wrong? I mean, where was the greater risk or leap for someone, either lending out their place or actually renting along?
All the way through this process, there's been more demand than there's been supply, right? It's harder to get people to take their most valued asset and put it at any risk or peril of damage. So the notion of letting strangers stay in your house or stay in your vacation rental or whatever, it's always been the bigger challenge. People, I think, are more willing to explore these other options on the demand side because pricing often is lower. So I could get a deal. You know, couchsurfing.com has been a website that existed before Airbnb, and people literally be willing to, you know, surf on your couch because they could, you know, pay $10 to spend a night with you, whereas they could never get any close to that to travel across the country.
Now, laws and regulations surrounding Airbnb. I was reading a piece in the Wall Street Journal in 2016, Governor Doug Ducey signed a law known as the Airbnb Bill, which severely limits local regulation of short-term rentals One of the downsides, obviously, is somebody who lives in an apartment and next door it's being rented out to a different person every night, and some of them are less interested in having a quiet night out. And then, of course, you've got people in neighborhoods. What kind of risk has this been, and what kind of regulation has grown up around Airbnb?
Well, it's like a lot of the sharing economy, which weren't prepared for what kind of regulations were needed and what was too draconian and what was insufficient to guarantee civil behavior. So what you see is lots of reactionary policy making. California had a terrible experience in 2019 and at Halloween, where a party ended up in gunfire and two people were dead, and it was an Airbnb listing. So these things are, there's a lot of regulation, a lot of reactive regulation that goes on. I think at the core of it all is a question of, do you have the right to use your property as a short-term rental or not? And so people struggle with that personal property rights issue. It is a rights responsibility problem. You know, if you are doing this and you are not responsible to your neighbors, then you shouldn't be doing this and you should be shut down. And I think you're seeing a lot more of that. Airbnb has a neighbor hotline, for example, so that if there's any problems associated with what is an Airbnb in your community, you can reach out to them. This all gets down to responsible use of anything, your car, your home, whatever it might be.
Stay with us for more of this great conversation in just a moment.
Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, delivers over 40 years of experience in a broad base of services from accounting and tax to cybersecurity, technology, and transaction advisory. Bloom's experts will maintain an unwavering focus on your future, so you can focus on what's most important to you, your business. Step forward at BloomShapiro.com.
The Airbnb Way, we're speaking with the author of this wonderful book, and it really is so easy to read, and yet there are so many important lessons if you are thinking about this sharing economy and how you fit in, whether it's somebody who has to design something new for us or just want to partake in it. And Joseph Michelli is with us. Joseph, when we do look at Airbnb today, what is it that we really need to take away about what was lacking in the hospitality industry that really allowed it to come up and come forward? And is there enough demand? Because all of these chains are still there. Many of these Caribbean vacations with sandals and beaches and all of these others. So they haven't gone away. So where was it? Was there a pent-up demand that we just didn't realize? Or are they, in fact, really taking business away from the more conventional approaches to hospitality?
So I have a friend who's a hotelier in Beverly Hills, and he never thought that there would be any impact on the Beverly Hills property that he manages. But many of the mansions in the area are on Airbnb right now, and the sultans are coming over and bringing their entire teams and taking over the mansions with the chef. And so, it is having an impact. There's no doubt about it. The issue, I think, is largely this, and that is that there are a variety of different need states for travel, and yet hotels try to create a sameness of experience across all of the landscape. The last thing, in the 80s and 90s that hotels wanted to do was create a negative surprise during your travel. You wanted to have consistency wherever you the problem is that created a 350-square-foot hotel room that looks very much like the 350-foot-square hotel room. It's normally near a convention center. It really drives urban travel. Oftentimes you feel isolated from the communities. You're not around real people. So in general, I think the answer is that there are varieties of need states. And this appeals to people who want to stay in a yurt or somebody who wants to stay in a castle. It appeals to somebody who doesn't want to be right next to the convention center but wants to be in the community. Or maybe they have family members that they don't necessarily want to stay with, but they want to be nearby in a suburban area. So I think there's going to be plenty of demand. There's plenty of room for all of it. I personally stay in hotels a lot of the time, and I also stay in Airbnbs on other kinds of need travel states.
Just so I don't leave them out, and I've had some great experiences at regular B&Bs, differentiate the B&B experience. Is it that we're still in a small collective together and we're all tourists? What is it that defines a B&B versus Airbnb?
So I think Airbnb is just the platform, really. So many of the B&Bs that you're talking about, you could potentially book through their own website, or they're listing on Airbnb. Now, some of them are listing only on Airbnb, but they're still the B&B. It's just there's such a marketplace. There's so much traffic going to that website that if I can get in the algorithm fairly high up every time you search in my city for a bed and breakfast kind of accommodation, then you're going to see me, and it's going to be very easy for me. The other thing is that Airbnb will then guarantee me the $1 million damage insurance for every booking that happens on their website. They'll take about 3 to 6% for the transaction, which is about what I'm going to pay to manage my credit card with a customer. So if you think about it, in many ways, it helps that a regular B&B with marketing, traffic, a guarantee, and it doesn't take much out of their pocketbook from what they would be charging, would they be charged anyway for just the credit card processing alone.
Now, you say that Airbnb has not just dominated the hospitality industry, it's transformed it by focusing on three human needs. So did we really know that we were getting shortchanged all these years and getting simply a room? Or did we, when we realized that there was something more that we could get, aside from some of the boutique experiences that you talk about in the book where you can rent a yurt or a caboose on a train that is, situated in the middle of some beautiful wooded area. I mean, there are all kinds of different elements to Airbnb today, but just the basic, accommodations. What did we learn from Airbnb that was missing?
I think we got very transactional in what was called hospitality. Now, clearly there are exceptions, and there were really elevated hospitality experiences at many hotels, and the Ritz-Carlton is the one I talked about earlier. But a lot of the times it's just transactional. It's just like herd them in, herd them out, get them out at 11, can't stay 15 minutes longer without a charge. I mean, it really got to be just moving people in and out of a space. And I think that Airbnb at least attempts to get its host community to think beyond the very primal need for safe accommodations and really think about creating, as you put it, the magical end-to-end experience, but moreover, just a place where we feel like we belong and someone cares about us. I think hotels have done a great job of caring for us when it comes to making sure that the sheets are clean and all of that. But when it gets down to, do they care about you? And Airbnb is trying to tell hosts, you have a chance to personalize the experience, to anticipate needs, and demonstrate service with heart, which is the way they define hospitality.
And when we look at the key lessons that any business owner or a leader or average person can learn from Airbnb, what is it that we should really take away in any industry about really making the customer feel central to the entire experience?
I think we have to talk about our businesses as being in the people business. I wrote about it in my first book about Starbucks when Howard Schultz would say, we're not in the coffee business at Starbucks, we're in the people business. I think Airbnb is really saying that. We have lots of technology. We thought we were in the technology business for a long time, but ultimately we're in the people business. And so everything we should do is to change or affect the perception of a person. And that perception, you have to kind of know what you want them to feel. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Airbnb, we want them to feel belonging. But in your business, you might want them to feel something different. Maybe you want them to feel inspired. If so, then build your business so that people walk out feeling that consistently. I think that's an important lesson for all of us to think about, that the emotional experience of people defines our brand. That's what people say about us when we're not around, is our brand. And so Airbnb really does try to do that. And I think we're all hosting. You're hosting the show. We're all hosting. Even if it comes to our website and we never have a face-to-face interaction, let's host them on the website thoughtfully, anticipating what their wants, needs, and desires are and what they might need in the future and be able to address those things. So that's
and how about the navigation on the website? I mean, that is so important for people to feel that this is easy, because travel can be so darn complicated and there's so many elements to it. I know whenever I've taken a trip with a Costco travel, the thing I liked about it was they took care of everything from the transfers to the vetting of the facility, to the air, and it just made it so much easier. How good have they been at Airbnb? Well, really, they're selling the platform and the brand. I mean, they don't really own anything themselves.
Yeah, no, they're the fastest loading website in the travel industry, according to those people who spend time clocking such things. And, you know, I think beyond that, the point of convenience is at the center of everything. Today, if I were running a business, if, you know, other than the one I run, I'd be asking this question every single day, which is, how do we make it easier? You know, how do we make this, you know, less friction in the experience? Where are the pain points? How do we streamline this? That's the brand that wins today. Customer effort, Harvard Business Review article showed that if you reduce customer effort, you increase customer spend and increase customer loyalty. Game, set, match.
And what about those who are renting? What is their relationship meant to be with the person in the home? We did it recently in the Berkshires, and it was a gorgeous accommodation. A log cabin would not do it justice. It was just very well appointed. And we had a few things about the fireplace and such, and we were communicating regularly through texting. What's the normal relationship between the homeowner and those who are renting for the short term?
Most people are communicating through the app, the communication, you know, app within Airbnb. That's the primary way, but some people prefer to sit and go out to dinner with the host. And, you know, normally on the profiles of the host, you will be able to see their interaction style. It's something that they're supposed to list. And so most of them range, and they'll say, you know, we prefer to be hands off. We want you to have your stay, but if at any time you'd like us to come over and visit with you or whatever, I mean, it goes the full extreme. Or we don't live in the same city, and so we're only going to interact with you by app, but we have someone in town who can help you if your furnace doesn't work. So the range is there. Lots of folks want, you know, intimate connections, but most folks today are content to just have somebody there giving them a little guidance on how to make their experience more enriched.
I found it very interesting that you said that seniors are growing as the host demo, and that senior women consistently get the best rated host ratings. I think that's great, because it would seem as if the young people have really adapted to this, as they have all elements of the sharing economy, in ways that some of us older folks are taking just a little bit longer.
Yeah, but the beauty of this is that we've seen two things really largely when we talk to senior hosts around the world. Some of them who are hosting accommodations are saying it's protecting them against housing insecurity. They're afraid of losing their homes or getting into some kind of reverse mortgage or something, and they're able to protect it by getting this incremental income. The other thing we're seeing is a lot of seniors going into creating experiences for Airbnb. So we've talked about accommodations, but, you know, there's also this offering on Airbnb. If you want to go on a city tour, if you want somebody to teach you how to make paella, whatever, I mean, there are those offerings as well. So imagine somebody who makes great paella but feels marginalized because they're no longer in the workforce, they're not seeing as much value, but now they're offering their services up to teach people how to make paella vis-a-vis Airbnb. It's been remarkable, the sense of generativity, as Erickson talks about, the ability to pass on to the next generation, the wisdom you've acquired. A lot of that's going on through the Airbnb platform. It's exciting to talk to seniors in this space.
Well, you say, of course, that they are growing in so many ways, these experiences, trips that you can go on, resi in terms of reservations at fine restaurants. You're talking about the fact that you can really do so many things. Airbnb continues to evolve over time to meet the needs, because you also remind us that belonging, trust, hospitality, empowerment, and community, that those are really the watchwords. Are there any among those traits that are most important and that they're growing into as a brand to fulfill?
Yeah, I think empowerment is very important. I think we have to help people take what they have and unlock it to create value for themselves and others. And Airbnb has a very aggressive economic empowerment agenda. They're trying to grow in areas that are predominantly minority locations, trying to get more economic growth through the vehicle of home sharing. So I'm very excited about what they're trying to accomplish in the context of empowerment.
And how does Airbnb compare to some of the other brands with whom you've worked and studied? I'm just curious, because we see the sharing economy evolving in so many ways. And some of the companies have done extremely well. Others have had, sharp criticism pointed toward them. Looking at Airbnb, where do you put them on the sharing scale and the ability really to adapt to circumstances?
Well, I think they're getting plenty of controversy. Don't get me wrong. I think we don't understand this economy, the negative impacts of it, as well as the positive impacts. And I'll let the social theorists explain all that and the economists figure it all out. You know, for me, I'm always just looking for what's great in a brand. You know, I'll never tell why did Enron fail stories. I'll only continually look for what is it at Starbucks that they're doing that's creating this third place where people want to come? Or why is the Ritz-Carlton still relevant, you know, hundreds of years after Cesar Ritz? What are they doing that can inspire us to do better in business? And at Airbnb, it is, what is Airbnb trying to do at a macro level as a brand? And then how are they inspiring hosts? And then how are these individual people doing remarkable things to serve other absolute strangers in ways that really inspire me to do better service day in and day out?
And as you look at Airbnb going forward, do you think that their planning is such that we are going to be dealing with them as the prime sharing element in this hospitality business for the long term? What does competition, aside from the traditional rooms that are available, what does the competition look like that's forming? Because there's got to be others who really look at their success and want a piece of that.
I think it's the same story of an Uber, for example. I mean, yes, there'll be competitors. They'll take some market share away. But predominantly, these brands have such a lead position in the industry that as long as they continue to innovate and execute, they should be able to hold on to ground. I think you'll see a lot of adjacent movement in Airbnb. I wouldn't doubt they'll own an airline someday. I mean, it's that kind of adjacencies that I think you'll see more and more over the future. But soon they'll get an influx of capital in 2020 as a result of their public offering, which will, I think, ingratiate them for a while in terms of what they can do, kind of like a Salesforce, for example, after they receive their funding.
And just remind us again of the business model, very high level, 30,000 feet. In other words, what is it again that they take from each of these transactions?
Yeah, let me give you a basic number, about 6%-ish, 3 to 6%, varying from the host. And for that, they're taking care of all the marketing and the transactional stuff and providing the guarantee. So it's really very light on the host side. Then on the guest side, they take a more generous percentage, and that's based largely on the amount of cost. So, you know, single nights versus multiple nights, it's a variable scale, but it's more generous than 6%. And that's all them, right? They get all of that for creating this marketplace, and that's how they make their money.
What about length of stay? I mean, are they trying to work on that? Do they really want to be an in and out, or do they want people to stay for extended periods of time?
Well, I think the optimal situation, and pricing is obviously done by the host themselves. So some hosts give you a discount for multiple nights of stay as opposed to a single rate. It's always more economical for a guest to stay multiple nights because there are often fees associated with cleaning that are a one-time fee, where, you know, if you stay multiple nights, you pay it once instead of having to pay it for a single night's transaction. So, but I don't think that Airbnb has a design, in this in terms of trying to extend length of stay. They've got so much activity on the website that it works for them either way.
The Airbnb Way, 5 leadership lessons for igniting growth through loyalty, community, and belonging. Joseph Michelli has been with us. Joseph, when we look at brand today, I mean, how important, I don't think we can overstate the fact that we are all so moved by a certain standard that we envision with various brands. And there are a lot of brands today who are kind of killing it, but they're also in the same moment killing a lot of other businesses. Obviously, I'm thinking of Amazon, but Airbnb, Uber, as you say. I mean, are we looking at the conglomeration of brand today? And given the internet, the ability to have these economies of scale that are so huge, I mean, what are we losing in the process, even though we are gaining so much in terms of speed and accountability and such? But what are we losing here, or am I just being old-fashioned in my thinking at times?
I'm just not so worried about this conglomeration thing. I mean, let's go back to the Blockbuster Netflix discussion that we had the other, you know, at the beginning of this, and I was giving examples of what killed what, you know. Clearly, Blockbuster had a monopoly. They were the big dog. There's one of them now in Bend, Oregon. It's kind of just a fantasy place for people.
Like
a
Howard Johnson,
right?
But I think there's one.
Exactly. It's that one. There's one holding on. But it was the player, and we didn't have a lot of other choices. There might have been mom and pops, but the real brand was Blockbuster. Netflix was the competitor, but look at Netflix right now. It's in constantly struggling against Disney Plus and any other sort of streaming service that comes out there. I think if you have a quality product, you deliver it in an innovative way, and you deliver great service, you've got a chance to break through against these monolithic solid brands. But you have to do something remarkably, you know, exciting and different for the consumer to want to explore it. You know, I do worry some about Amazon, I guess, at some level, but they execute, and I'm as addicted as anybody else to them. But I certainly think that there's still room. There's room for great ideas in business today.
Well, we're always going to have room on our bookshelf for books written by Joseph Michelli about brands like the Airbnb way. Hey, I got to thank you so much, Joseph, for being with us today on America Trends. Really a fascinating book and a really important one for those who want to understand what leadership really looks like in an industry, and leadership that came out of nowhere, literally, just about 10 years ago. Thanks so much again.
Larry, you're an amazing host. Thank you.
America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network, mhnrnetwork.com. Bloom Shapiro, New England's largest independent business advisor, delivers 40 years of experience in industries from manufacturing to professional services to nonprofit.